Hey, welcome to my show. I'm Schnoodlebug. This is a DIY podcast about making stuff no matter what. As always, this episode is brought to you by Schnoodle Video. Hey, are you in need of an editor? Schnoodle Video offers professional short-form edits of long-form content like live streams and IRL events. For examples of their work, check out schnoodlevideo.com or hit the link in the show notes. Ethan Campa is an improvisational drummer based out of San Antonio, Texas, who has been collaborating and touring with his experimental free jazz style since the summer of 2019, when he first performed with Andre Sanchez on guitar under the Coach Campa name.
And like, you'd think more people would do it, but content is so, so important. Look, I'm not in a position where I can pay someone to film me on tours. I do it all myself. I the previous tour I did in August with the band, I remember they had a tripod on them, and I was like, well, why aren't we filming anything? You know, and they were like, well, what for? And I was like, what do you mean, what for? Do you not want people to see? Do you not want to have it? Like, yeah, that was just a whole other thing. But yes, it's just so important. You know, you want to film. I want to film as much as possible. I want to film all my shows because I want to have something to look back on. And yeah, you never know who's curious about, you know, your stuff. I always like finding, probably like you, you know, I always like finding people's, you know, accounts, and oh my God, they've archived all this stuff. This is awesome. This is amazing. From this tour, you know, they did this at this time. Like, I like that kind of stuff. So for me, it's, I want people to, and also it's also just to have stuff to send, you know, whenever you're booking stuff in general. You know, you got to think that way. You know, I can't trust other people to film me. Like, I can't always expect, you know, what Instagram videos were I tagged in from the show last night. You know, not everyone's going to be doing that, and you can't always expect other people to do that.
Absolutely.
I gotta help myself. So yeah, literally on tour, you'll always find me before the set setting up the stupid tripod and testing out my phone angle for where I'm going to leave it and make sure it's in a spot where I can, you know, it's in range. Mm-hmm. So no one's messing around or anything, you know? So
it does so much, and you know, it's how I found you. Right. So, it's huge for that. It's an asset, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just, yeah. And it doesn't do anything to harm you. It's only going to help. So, No, I'm a big person on filming your own stuff. It's hard in the sense of like, I'm getting to a point in my life where it's like, well, I'm only getting older, and I'm not sad by any means. You know, I have a pretty rich life in terms of the things that I have, you know, depends on how you look at it. So there's a lot of people that are like down and, oh, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. But it's like, well, I mean, you have a roof over your head and you have food in your refrigerator, so it's fine. But yeah, like, do I wish I was doing more musically? Do I wish that was taking up more of my time? Yeah, of course. But as long as I'm able to tour and yeah, really without work, you know, I'm able to have PTO and be able to take off time. And luckily I'm able to have management that's cool with what I do outside of work. And they're not the kind of manager that's like, well, you gotta work. You gotta be a part of the, you know, part of the family here. And it's like, no, they get it. They get it. Cause everyone at the end of the day, there is pretty much the same mindset anyway. Cause it's like the kind of people that are like, oh, you play the drums. Oh, that's awesome, man. You get to do that every day. And it's like, I try to think of those whenever I'm feeling a little down on myself. You know, it's like, well, I do get to play drums every day, and that is pretty cool. And a lot of people with a lot of pursuing, you know, I guess whatever they did, and you know, I guess how do I say this? Maybe bigger, more important jobs or whatever, and they're like, well, I don't get to play my instrument as much as I wish I did, you know. So it's like, okay, well, I guess I'm doing that, and that's cool. So this is where I try not to be too look my nose up, you know, at people. Like it's no one's fault, you know, when they're interested in what you do. But I do get that a lot. It's like, oh, you're playing a show? What's that? You know, what are you doing? Oh man, you must be. And then this and this and this. And it's like, well, if you saw the venue I played in, you know, Tennessee last month, you wouldn't be saying the same thing. But yeah, it's funny. It's funny in that sense. I remember playing a show. This is a couple years ago when I did my first tape release through Already Dead. That was kind of my first time releasing anything through any label whatsoever. And I remember I had a family member. It was like a family friend that was like, oh man, I feel like you're famous. You know what I mean? It's kind of hilarious in that sense.
Yeah. When people don't have the context, they just think performer equals, you know, Taylor Swift in a stadium or
something,
right?
So. Yeah, exactly. One thing I will say about my job was, because of what it is, I had to work. I've been there for about 5 years, so I had to work throughout the entire pandemic. So I was, in a way, thankful for that. Because during all that time, that was when I started really getting into what I'm doing now with all the improvisation and experimental drumming I'm doing. Because I was just at my practice space. No one was there. No one was ever there. So just to get out of the house, I'd go to my practice space, and I had bought all these new cymbals, like splashes and clap stacks, and I was messing around at first, and then I got the idea, oh, well, what if I put all this on my drums, you know? What if I just, you know, what else were you going to do during that time? And just a lot of thinking and a lot of messing around. And I had gotten into a lot of the like breakbeat style of drumming, you know, like J.D. Beck was getting really popular, and Luis Cole, he was getting really popular, or had already been popular, but I had started noticing their videos and, oh, that's really cool. What if I did some stuff like that? But then I wanted to expand more on it. I'm a big Zach Hill, Chris Corsano fan. So just kind of, you know, looking through that stuff and being influenced by all of that. And I think 2019 was around, like, late 2019, I did my first improv set. I played with my buddy Andres, and we did just about like a 20-minute just improv drone-y kind of thing. So going into 2020 was when I wanted to expand on that, but of course, you know, couldn't do anything. I think my first show, I can't remember. It might have been December 2021. I think that was about it. Obviously, I didn't do anything 2020. Most of 2021 didn't do anything. I think in San Antonio, a lot of shows started picking up. Personally, I thought shows were picking up way sooner than they should have. I think a lot of people would agree, and wherever everyone else lives. And you got, at least for me, and I think a lot of people maybe, but I got just so comfy, so complacent, you know, not doing anything. It was actually starting to feel pretty nice. And then it's like, oh no, shows are happening. People are playing again. What? Tours are getting booked again. Like, what's going on here? And then you find yourself in that position of, well, shit, do I have to play catch up? You know, and then it's that anxiety sets in, and, oh, I guess I can't sit on the couch anymore. I guess I got to do something about this whole being a musician thing, you know? I ended up doing because I just played like maybe, I say a handful, is probably a little more than a handful, but I think I did like a good chunk of shows over the last year. Leading up to me touring in January, I did that solo tour. Well, I did a duo tour with my friend Jacob, but that was my first time touring since 2017.
Right.
And I had always been in bands where, because I've been touring since 2010, on and off. And but I've always been in bands. I've always been like someone else was booking the tour, you know, someone else was booking the shows in general. You know, I was always just the drummer just coming along for the ride. But then once I start getting into, I think I was just burnt out from playing with bands in general around, I guess, 2018. I was playing with these two different bands in 2017 that were both kind of trying to like, we're both trying to do it. You know, it's not like I was in a band that was trying to make it and then the other bands were just, you know, side things, side projects. No, these were two bands that were like, just, no, we're both trying to do this thing. We're both trying to tour. And at that point, I had already been doing tours for like 8 straight years, no breaks. So I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. This is killing me. So I was super burnt out. I joke about this now, but I took like 6 months of not doing anything. And I had a friend, my buddy Jacob, who, funny enough, I did the tour with in January. I played another band with him as well. He reached out to me and he was like, do you want to play in my band? And at the time, initially I was like, I don't know if I want to do that just yet. And then he convinced me because our buddy Jared was playing bass. I didn't know this. And he was like, well, Jared's playing bass. And I was like, okay. Okay. You know, cause it's when they name drop someone you trust, it's like, okay, I guess I'll do this after all. So since then, but I do to this day have issues playing with bands. I guess it's as obvious as you just really got to trust who you're playing with and you really got to love the material. Cause I do play in this group, Mouthing, and they're more of a, I guess, hardcore screamo punk type thing. I'm bad with explaining like what it's heavy. It's heavy. It's really good. I really enjoy it. But they're kind of them. And then my group with my buddy Jacob, we're in a band called Porridge Fist. More of like a, I call it, we've been calling it like dream thrash, whatever you want to take from that. But when it comes to like bands, they're kind of the only two bands that I play with. For the most part, I really just grown to like the solo stuff is what I love doing the most. I saw Chris Corsano live, I think it was 2013 or 2014, made a rare San Antonio appearance. Not a whole lot of like artists. I mean, I guess people do come to San Antonio, but from like 2010, maybe through 2017, I felt like a whole lot of like, there's really a whole lot of nothing. You know, you got to go to Austin, Houston, Dallas. Yeah. So Chris Corsano came to town and I was just so like amazed at how like someone could play that kind of, you know, because he just does the solo improv drumming, and for someone to be able to do that and be able to tour, like I looked into his, like, okay, well, what does he do, how does he do, and just being able to be like, wow, like in 2014 at the time I did not have the chops, I guess, to be able to do it now or whenever I got comfortable enough to play like that. But I was just like, wow, like if someone could be able to do that kind of music and tour and be, you know, be able to be successful at it, you know, I want to give that a shot. And that's kind of what I'm doing now. But 2019 was kind of when I became like comfy enough with my drumming to be able to be like, well, let me give this a shot. You know, let me see what's up, and just kind of dipping my toe in the water. But I guess maybe the whole break from 2019 to 2022, you know, that was like me actually, okay, well, this is going to be enough time for me to rehearse, enough time for me to practice. Obviously, I didn't know in 2019 I'd have, you know, 2 years to get better at you know, that approach to drumming. But definitely by this year, I felt a lot comfier doing that. And like I said before, I was always in bands where other people were, you know, taking over the bookings, taking over everything, songwriting. And now I've found myself in the position where it's like, well, I have to do all that now. You know, I'm not in, you know, if I want to do, I have to book my tours. I have to book my shows. I have to, you know, I don't like when, cause I've played with people in the past that just kind of want things to happen for them, you know? And it's like, I've played with people that are like, well, our music is so like different and so out there. People should be asking us, you know? And it's like, no, it's not gonna, it doesn't matter like just how good you are or whatever, like you have to do it. And yeah, I just, luckily I was able to know enough people to be able to be like, well, who do you know here? Who do you know here? Who do you know here? You know? And originally, cause I was fortunate enough to be able to do shows in Portland and Seattle. I wasn't originally going to do Portland and Seattle. Kind of last minute, I had a friend in Portland. I forgot they even lived in Portland, who reached out and was like, well, if you want to come up here, I could book you at this. I played, it was like a thrift store that once they closed, they do shows. And that was incredible. I think they were called Zero Wave thrift store, I believe, in Portland. And that was incredible. I had a really good time there. I knew Tim Berkland. He runs Imploding Sounds Records. And I think he's in Seattle or in the Seattle area. And he was like, just come to Seattle. I'll help you with the gig. So that was kind of why I went out there. Originally I wasn't, because I can't find anywhere in between San Francisco and Portland, and that was like a 10-hour drive.
Right.
You know, so I was just after San Francisco. Well, I did a show in Petaluma, but that's like 45 minutes outside of San Francisco. That was gonna be the highest I was gonna go, and then just make my way back down home, play shows along the way. But it was well worth the 10 hours. It was well worth driving through freaking mountains. And, you know, being on tour, it's like, because that was also like my first time doing all the driving, all the everything, you know. It's not like I'm not in the back seat. Like I have to actually do everything this time. And well, not everything. Jacob did help out a lot. But for the most part, I was driving and taking care of all of that. But I was like, I felt like at a certain point, looking like in hindsight, like you kind of start to take things for granted. Well, you know, because it's like, I really want to appreciate all this beautiful scenery, but it's like, I really just want to also get to my destination at the same time. Also, like the anxiety of, I have a rental van, you know, this isn't even my van. Like I had to get this from Enterprise, and it's like, well, I, God forbid something horrible happens to the van, what am I going to have to pay? You know, does my insurance cover? Well, all that stuff I really don't want to have to think about, you know? And then whenever you're playing, like I did a show in, it was before San Francisco. I think I played in Ventura, and I was asking about San Francisco. And when everyone's telling you like, oh, be careful, you know, be careful where your van is. And it's like, oh, great. I have to worry about that too. And then it's funny because it was kind of the perfect situation, the perfect like roller coaster of emotions. Cause it was about like a 7-hour drive. It felt longer. And there's just like this massive amount of traffic even before you get into San Francisco. And then you get there and it was, the neighborhood was very, there's a lot going on. And I'm like, gosh, where am I going to have to park? You know, I figured I was going to have to park like blocks away, you know, and it ended up being a house show, but all the houses in San Francisco are like apartments. So, I remember getting there and I had to park in an alley, and I asked the guy who was hosting us, where should I park? You know, is there an area I should park? And they go, I don't know. I don't even have a car. I don't have to worry about that. Like, I don't even have to worry about that. So I don't know, buddy. Okay. Let's figure this out. But thankfully, it was like, I don't know, magic. Someone across the street was pulling out.
Oh.
And I was just like, get in the van. So I ran to the van. And I had to be like annoying in the middle of the road for a second waiting for them to, but luckily it didn't take too long and I was able to get their spot. But yeah, touring. It was just like, once I got back home, and that wasn't even the worst of it. Driving all the way up to Seattle, I expected, because I don't think I'll do another January tour probably for a while, mostly because of the weather.
Yeah.
I'm from San Antonio, where I'm in South Texas, where nothing ever really happens. We did, although it was 2021, Valentine's Day 2021, when we had, it snowed in Texas. Like it snowed. Like the grid went down. Like it was really bad. It was really, really horrible. At first, I think I can only speak from my personal experience. At first, I think everyone was having like a nice time, you know, out in the snow playing around, but it snowed like 4 days that week, four or five. And by like the end of the second day, you're just like, all right, it's going to start melting sometime soon. Right. Like it was nice at first, but just not used to it. Just not used to the snow. But I was expecting to maybe hit snow going up to Seattle, and I never saw it. But it was coming back down that, because when we were leaving Seattle, we went through Northern California. Well, okay. Here's some more context. I was the goof that booked Seattle to Reno, Nevada, which is about 10, 11 hours. But I thought it was going to be, you know, I thought Reno was just going to be like a 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock show. You know what I mean? So I just figured, well, we'll get up really early and we'll leave. Well, I've done it before. It's doable. It's fine. But the person who booked me in Reno, they said, well, it's a house show, but it has to be done. Not start. It has to be done by 5 p.m. Meaning the show has to start around like 2 or 3. They go, well, it's a Sunday, it's a house show, we got to be done by like 5. I guess maybe they do that. Maybe they've done it before. So I just thought, well, I didn't say no right away. Even like beginning of tour, the show was still going to happen. And I just thought, well, we'll do an overnight drive, you know, we'll do an overnight drive. And luckily we didn't do that. My partner ended up talking me off the edge, ended up just like, no, just don't even do it. Just go, but don't worry about playing it. Just tell them. And luckily, thankfully, they were very understanding of the situation. They're like, no, your safety is more important, obviously.
Oh yeah.
But they were still willing to house us for the night, which was amazing. But I think we hung out too long in Seattle before leaving. It got dark real quick and I didn't know we were going to be driving. I guess I should have known we were going to be going back through mountains again, but this time it was just pitch black.
Yeah.
And then you start to notice the snow, but on the sides of the roads, you know, and it's like, well, it's not on the roads quite yet. And then it starts to get on the roads. It was like, oh no. Luckily we weren't on a highway, and luckily there wasn't really anyone behind us. So didn't really have too much to worry about in that regards. So I was just like, well, we'll just take our time. It'll be all right. And luckily we got through the mountain. That was fine. The next day we had to drive through Nevada. We were going to Albuquerque. And that was really rough. That was just nothing but highway snow. I guess it was a blizzard. It was horrible, but luckily everyone on the highway was driving very slow. So I felt like, well, okay, we're all in this together. We're all, it's all snowing. It's fine. But cause I freaked out. I had initially exited the highway. I pulled into a gas station. I was like, screw this. What are we going to do? But we were still really, really far away from, we had an Airbnb in Albuquerque. Luckily we didn't have a show. So I wasn't rushing, you know, to get anywhere just yet.
Yeah.
So then I thought, I was like, well, I could just drive or take it really slow on the highway. And I remember Jacob, who was with me, was like, well, that's an option. That is an option. So you can do that. So I did that, and the snow ended up maybe after an hour chilling out. Just once we got into New Mexico, it was actually pretty fine. It was okay. Mm-hmm. But I was like, okay, as long as we make it to the last day of tour, because we had a final show in Denton at Rubber Gloves. And I just assumed, I thought, well, we're going back to Texas. There's no way we're going to run into snow. But I do forget that North Texas does get snow. I just forget how bad of the snow it gets. And that was horrible. That was pretty bad. And what was worse was that we were under an hour out of getting to the venue. But this is what I hate about a lot of highways, is that a lot of the in between, you know, big cities, there's no lights. There's no street lights. There's nothing. So in this situation, it started to, you know, slowly flurry, and then it was flurrying some more to the point where I couldn't see. Wipers were at full blast, weren't helping. The brights were only making it worse, and there's no street lights. So I can barely see what's even in front of me. And I just remember telling Jacob, I was like, if there's any kind of place to exit and pull off into, please tell me. Yeah. So we pulled off into a gas station, and I was like, I can't do it. I can't see. And I'm not nearly as comfy as some of these other drivers up here that seem to be driving just fine. So I had to hit up the venue and just say, hey, I can't make it. You know, I just can't. So I had to cancel that last day of tour. But yeah, that was kind of my first solo tour. Luckily, we at least did 9 straight shows from Lubbock up to Seattle, which I would say was a successful run. But it was good. It was a good time. It was a good time. I was supposed to do a tour in June, this past June.
Right.
I had to cancel it because in hindsight, it's one of those things where I just should have stuck to my, you know, with my guts. I had the whole thing booked, venues, you know, who I was going to be playing with. An opportunity did come up, the tour I just did in August with, this punk group. I played with them. It was good. The shows were fun. It was a fun time. These are people I know. They're friends of mine. I just wish I had done the tour in June. I guess I felt like the August tour was going to be a different... Like, I was like, well, this is a big opportunity. This is something I should do. We were touring with this other group that I think is really great. I guess what I'm trying to say is I wish I had just done the experimental tour. And... one thing I'll say, and this is what a friend of mine I was just talking about this, and they were like, you know, always bet. I'm not trying to sound like some kind of like, you know, I guess a motivational speaker or whatever, but like, I don't know, I guess always just bet on yourself, you know, and I should have bet on myself in the solo tour situation, you know, cause it kind of goes back to the, playing with bands kind of thing. And this was just a situation where I was filling in, you know, mm-hmm. Which I'd never really done that before. I had always been in bands I was already in. But this was a band I was kind of just helping out. And, you know, I don't know if I'll ever be the hired gun type of musician. Like, I guess some people, that's what they want to do, but like I said, I have to really, really love what I'm doing, or else it's, I don't know, it gets to a point where, why am I really doing this, you know?
Totally.
These aren't, as fun as these songs can be, like, these aren't my songs. These aren't something I put love into creating.
It's just another lesson in kind of, on top of being an artist, also being your own manager And usually you have somebody else that can kind of help make those decisions or have the kind of real world, you know, this is a good idea, this is not a good idea kind of knowledge, or at least someone to bounce those ideas off of. You're doing this all yourself, so you're just learning your own lessons.
I'm not trying to fall into that, what I'm seeing a lot, and definitely what I've felt, and I guess even, I mean, I'm only human, so I'm trying not to get in that. I think I may even have referenced it earlier, but the whole, I need to play catch up, you know, kind of thing, you know, because I found myself in a situation where I think this was a group who's seeing a lot of bands that maybe they were on the same level as pre-pandemic, you know, we were on the same level as so-and-so and so-and-so. And now post-pandemic, these other bands, they're touring Europe and they're going here and they're going there and they're playing all these festivals. And here we are still, you know, doing these, however they want to look at it, their DIY tours or whatever, which, I mean, it's not even, they do pretty okay. But they look at it as like, we need to play catch up and we need to book this tour. We need to do this and we need to do this. And it's like kind of at the detriment of certain people around them. And it's like, yeah, I can't be around this. I don't want to be around this. This is why I've become comfortable doing the solo work. And now I have more confidence in myself to where it's like, if I see something even from a mile away where I'm already questioning it, it's like, okay, no, I'm gonna cut the head off of this right now. I can't do this. And I ended up finding myself in a situation like that where I was just like, no. You know, it's fun. The songs are fun, you know. But I already wasn't, you know, married to this. I guess I agreed to do it because I thought it would have been something, and it would have been something I might have enjoyed. Because how do I word this? As much as I do love the solo stuff, the improv and the experimental stuff I've been doing over the last year or two, I can't forget where I came from, you know, like, and that was playing in bands, you know, and if I do one thing for too long, I'll start to miss the other thing, you know, like if I'm always playing solo stuff, I'm going to eventually miss playing in bands. As much as I have grown to not like playing in bands, you know, working with other people, but like I said, I have to do it in, you know, small amounts. Like I play like the group Porridge Fist and Mouthing, like it's not a whole lot, or as much as it should be. But I mean, I find a healthy balance. As long as I'm doing the other thing, you know, the other thing, both things can live together in harmony, you know. Because I think next year I'm going to be doing a little more with Mouthing. We have a whole bunch of new material that needs to get recorded. So I think that's going to be more of a thing. But I'm also planning solo stuff more, like, I want to do a lot more touring with that. Yeah. I want to just go all out with that because I should have done that this year. And I try not to be, like, regretful of a lot of things, but that was one thing. I'll admit I do regret not just doing the solo tour over the summer, because had I done the solo tour, it probably would have given me, I probably would have toured again in the fall,
right?
But since I did the August tour, I'm not comfy doing a tour that soon. Mm-hmm. So I'm just gonna push it off till maybe March,
right?
And do something there. But you know, it's as obvious as just you live and learn.
Yeah, so definitely. On Instagram, you post about the practice space, or you post videos in that space. Is that just like a garage of some sort? What kind of space is that?
It's a storage unit. It's a lockaway storage unit. There's a good deal of them here, but I don't think I think there's only, especially now, I think there's only maybe a handful that even allow bands to rehearse there. Mm. Yeah, it's funny when I people are like, you rehearsed out of like a storage unit? And it's like, yeah, surprisingly, it's kind of been like that for about, gosh, I think like 10 years. It's been like that. Not at the same one, but other lockaway storages. But over the last like year or two, they had been cracking down on bands practicing there. But the one I'm at now, actually, I think there's another one. Funny enough, we're going to be moving out of the one now into another one. But I think there's only one in the city that kind of is like encourages bands to rent out of there. Because I mean, bands need places to rehearse, you know, like unless someone has like a house that they can practice at. But I mean, I know a lot of bands that we gotta rent out at a studio or something, and like an hourly rate. And it's just like, I guess for me, I'm fortunate enough to be in a group of people at the unit where we rent out a big unit, but it's only about like 30 to 40 bucks a month. Luckily, you know, so between us, it's really not that bad. Fortunately, I'm in a situation where I can be in a group and we can all, you know, split it amongst ourselves. But yeah, it's literally just at a storage unit where luckily for the most part, no one's even really there. And the off chance that someone is there, usually they just keep to themselves. There's maybe like a handful of times where someone's been like, oh, I'll only be here for a little bit, you know, can you mind keeping it down just for, and it's like, whatever, it's fine. But luckily that's way less times than, you know, more than the times it actually has happened. If I'm hitting all green lights, it's probably like 5 to 10 minutes.
Oh, beautiful.
Okay. It's very close. It's very close from where I live. Yes.
Very cool.
My job, I'm actually not, my job's about like maybe 20 minutes away, but luckily I work mornings. I go in at 5 a.m. and there's no traffic. So I it's like a breeze getting to work, no traffic. And then even coming home, I'm out by 1, 2 at the latest, and there's still no traffic. So that's great. That's the one thing about the position I have, is that it's a set schedule, which is rare for a place like that. No one really has a set schedule. And if you kind of have to be an asshole to your boss and be like, can I have a set schedule? And they'll be like, well, why can't you work all kinds of hours? You know, they want you to be loose. Mm-hmm. But luckily I'm in a situation where I've somewhat worked my way up. I guess it's one of those, I've worked my way up and they pay me more to do less. So, that's the one thing. It's like, okay, well, I guess that's cool. It's not, my work's far. I guess that's where I was getting at. My work is far, but my practice space is very close to where I live. So yeah, whenever I want to practice, it's just right there, you know? So there's no excuse for me to not practice.
That's beautiful.
But yeah, the beginning or the majority, the chunk of the 2020, that was, yeah, no one was ever there. And trying to stay, I guess that was the time to get creative, which is, I don't know. Like, I guess I practice a lot anyway, as it is. So I don't want to say it was like any different. But obviously I wasn't meeting with anyone to rehearse, you know, I wasn't having in-person practices. I think I did have one where we were like really far from each other. And it was just like, this is kind of goofy. Yeah. Like, we were fine, but yeah, those were very, very few and far between. I remember we did have one where it was with my group, Porridge Fist. And afterwards we were just like, yeah, we probably shouldn't have done that. Like, we probably shouldn't have practiced. Cause even there we were just like, maybe we should leave. But I think we ended up going through it. Luckily my job was, they were really lenient with, at the beginning of the pandemic, they were pretty lenient with, call-ins, you know, cause I guess like, most places you if you call in a bunch, you'll get fired, right? So they had lifted their call outs. They were just like, if you need to call out, you know. For like, for once, they were being respectful to people's mental health, I guess, which is, I guess, funny enough, I feel like that's out the window, you know. Now it's like, oh, you're fine, right? All that's over with, right? Like, you don't have to worry about anything. You need to come to work now. So, but then they were being very, very lenient, and they had lifted the call outs. Because at the time, I mean, I guess like most people, I was getting very like as extreme as this sounds, or maybe not, you know, everyone was kind of going through it. I was like, I'm going to fucking die. You know, I'm going to, you never know. I'm going to, because I was kind of ignorant as to what, you know, COVID was and the cases and all the numbers and all that. So to me, I was just like, well, I'm going to, you know, I work somewhere where I'm exposed to people literally every single day, you know? And as much as they were trying to be like, well, we're only allow this many people in, you know, it's not like everyone's being respectful of, you know, the distance policies, you know? But I was finding myself in positions of like, fuck, this is horrible. This is scary. Like, what am I doing? But I guess at the same time, it was like, well, I didn't get laid off, you know, like a lot of my friends did, and a lot of people in general got laid off. And I was never in a position where, I got to find work. I got to scramble, you know, what am I going to do? So there was that sense of, at least I have a job, you know? So at least I have a job, and at least I can do, I'm not playing shows right now. You know, just invest in what you're going to do after, you know, once you can start to do stuff again. So that's kind of just where I was trying to see the bright side of things, I guess, during a not so bright time. It was just like, well, you know, get some new stuff, invest in what you want to do with your drumming. I mean, that was the only way I could look at it. I swear I developed a anxiety rash that summer. It was wild. Every day, and I'm thankful to my partner for not losing her mind on me, because every day I would, it was like something new every single day. I'm like, look at this thing on my arm. Was that there yesterday? You know, and it's like, stop. So, but I had to kind of control it somehow, and practicing was definitely, because, you know, as much as, like I was saying, like I would practice a lot by myself anyway, but pre-pandemic, you know, but during the pandemic, now I have this mindset of, well, this is kind of my, you know, therapeutic to everything going on, you know, everything, going to work, having to be around people every single day, and then even working with people in general that are like, well, I don't even want to wear a mask, you know, people who are also being, you know, being in ways you wish they weren't, you know. And it's just like, well, we have to, you know, as much as you don't like it, like, I don't really want to, you know, it's like, nobody really wants to. Exactly. Yes. It's like, well, nobody really wants to be doing this, but we have to do this, you know, in order for this to not be a thing. So just freaking do it. So you got to deal with that. You got to deal with everyone's, you know, everyone's personalities every day. And, you know, it's like, that's the only thing. Drumming was the only like thing I could do. You know, that was like going there was like one of the few things I could do that would just like, you know, maybe this will feel like somewhat. And actually I'd actually forgotten about this. I was not going to my practice space the first few months of the pandemic. I wasn't even going there. I was like, for some reason, well, I can't go there, you know, like I can't go. But it's like, well, I'm paying for this practice space, I may as well go. And no one's even there anyway. Yeah. So I figured, as long as no one's there, it's fine. But I did buy an electronic drum kit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like at the beginning of the pandemic, I guess I thought, well, I'm just going to stay home. I'm not going to leave the house ever. I'm going to be home and it's just going to be like that. No, I ended up, I'm only going to work and coming back and that's it. So in that time I ended up buying an e-kit.
Right.
But playing the e-kit, it's like, and like, I think it might've been 2 or 3 months I didn't touch the actual kit. But when I went back to actually playing my actual drums, I thought playing the e-kit would like, oh, it's fine. You know, I was playing an e-kit. I was drumming anyway, but it's like, oh my God, no, it's not the same. It's not the same thing at all. And I'm not used to playing on e-kits at all. I never really played one until the pandemic. Till 2020, I got an e-kit, and that was really my first time in general. So going from that back to my actual drums was like, oh my God, no, I need to be playing my actual drums. So, because I had like, it was like I was playing with hammers. Like my arms felt hard. Like it was heavy, you know, I was tensing up way, way, way too fast. And I mean, that would have happened, I guess, in general. Honestly, it felt like as if I had gone months without drumming in general.
Right.
That's kind of what it felt like, but I was playing on an e-kit, but it's like, it didn't even matter, you know? So I was just, I need to be drumming anyway.
When you returned to the acoustic drums after all that time, had you been practicing or dabbling in the free jazz, more improvisational stuff on your own before that? Or was this something where, like, with all this energy, you were starting to really veer down that territory?
I did a show August 2019, my first solo show or improv show. I did a duo set with a buddy of mine from South Tech, from McAllen, I believe he lives. When I first got into free jazz and free improv, in general, but that was like 2014.
Yeah.
But I was like I said, I wasn't in a position of, I wasn't comfortable with my own drumming at that time to feel like this is something I could do.
Right.
I had friends at the time who could do that. And it's like, you see that and well, maybe I can do that. And it's funny, 'cause I do have like some videos I took from then, where I felt like I was free jazz drumming in my mind, in my 2014 mind. And looking back at it, it's like, oh, this is horrible. This is not nearly where I feel like I'm at now. And even now it's like, well, I guess like everyone, well, there's always room for growth. I have a buddy who was telling me recently, I always think about that, you know, that Zach Hill Chill Pill album or group he had for a bit. They have that aggressively humble album. I always think about that. But it's my buddy who plays saxophone, my buddy JT, incredible saxophone player. Who's another, there's not really a whole lot of, at least I don't know a whole lot of sax players in San Antonio. But he's just so open to all that stuff that I do. But he was like, you know, you're like really good, right? And I was just like, well, I can always be better. And he was just like, why can't you say it? And I'm like, I'm never going to say it, you know, I'm never going to say it. But yeah, it's funny. In 2014, I thought maybe I could, but thankfully, I didn't actually venture out into solo shows then, because that wouldn't have been good. But 2019, I felt somewhat comfortable in doing all of that. I had been practicing somewhat, although I didn't. The show that I did play, I think I may even have footage of that on my YouTube channel. But the show that I did play, I didn't like do all the. I didn't do all the cymbal stuff. Like I did buy, and I still have it, the gong that I have. I actually bought it that day of the show that I played in 2019. But that was like the closest, like, to what I do now. I did, funny enough, I had like the gong on my floor tom, and I did put the China symbol on my floor tom, but I didn't play. I didn't really know what to do. Like, I remember in the moment, in the heat of performing, like, I put it on my floor tom, but I'm like, oh God, why did I do that? Like, what do I do now? You know, like, cause I was just so used to playing in a certain way before, but I was like, well, whatever, do something. But I was playing something a little more like a beat, I guess, something a little more straightforward, to where now I have more of, I guess my mind's a little more open now, I guess, in that sense of what I want to do or what I can do. Cause even then, like, I felt like I didn't have, I guess I wasn't confident in doing the free form playing or shredding, if you will, that I'm, I guess, able to do right now. But pre-pandemic, yes, August of 2019 was my first like free improv, free jazz show in general. I don't think I did another one right before the pandemic started.
How did you feel compared to that one? Were you feeling confident about that kind of going down that path?
Yes. And that's the thing, is I never want to, well, I guess you always want to go, but I guess I've learned in the past, when you have like I remember the very first time I ever went on tour, it was December 2010, going into 2011. My very first tour was like really good. And I thought like, and I was really, I think I was 18.
Oh, wow.
And I was, yeah. And I remember thinking like, oh man, all the tours are going to be like this. You know, this is awesome. You know, that was also another thing. My very first show with like my, I guess, first band I was in, that was a really good show. And it's kind of the curse of, you have a really good first show, you have a really good first tour, and then the next tour you go on is horrible. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, my very first improv show, that show was actually really good. People came out. It was actually pretty awesome. So it did give me that kind of confidence of, yeah, maybe I can do this, you know, maybe this is a thing I can pursue. But in a weird way, I'm not by any means thankful for the pandemic happening. But what I'm trying to say is, I'm glad I had that time to myself, yeah, to be able to, I guess I'm just thankful for how I navigated my own, my personal time. Cause it really gave me time to think, you know, gave me time, one, to get better at this, to get better at playing by myself and, you know, doing this type of drumming by myself. And just to like kind of do research of other musicians who do this successfully. And, you know, pick people's brains, you know, well, how do you do this? How far in advance do you plan stuff out? You know, trying to just figure that out and ask other musicians. And then when the time was right for me to feel like maybe I can book a tour, maybe I can do, you know, cause there was, I think I did do a handful of recording sessions during the pandemic, but that was very like, I'm in this room, you're in that room. You know, it wasn't really a whole lot of, you know, close quarter interacting. So I was confident enough. I was fine doing that. And the person that was recording with me was fine. We were all comfortable doing that at least. But when it was time to like book a tour, I booked the tour I did in January. I started booking last August, I think. I gave myself like 6 months out. I was like, I feel like 6 months is the perfect amount of time to book a tour. If, at least if you want to do it, you know, successfully, you know, I'm not going to do like it's just impossible. Cause you know, I was also like in emailing venues, even 6 months out, they're like, oh, we're already booked, you know, already booked out, we're booked out. And it's like, wow. So I know there's some places like, I mean, I wasn't touring out east, but I know like New York, Chicago, like you got to book out like 6 to 8 months in advance, you know, if there's a lot of places like that, unless you already like know someone. But in this like position, I don't really know anyone, you know, not personally by any means. A lot of this was just by, oh, so-and-so told me about you, you know, so-and-so told me, I'm hoping by this mutual friend, you can help me book a show, you know? So it's like, and I also don't know, like, how close are you to this person? Yeah. You know, I could be going on just someone you barely even know, you know? And in doing that, I kind of learned, because like I said, that was the first time I ever had to do any kind of, you know, booking on my own ever. So, you know, I'm going from a few months out of the pandemic of booking my own like local shows or shows in Austin, shows in Houston. I'm going from that to, well, maybe I can book tours and maybe I can book in other states, you know, other cities and other states. So it was kind of, I don't know what I was thinking, you know, to go from such a, you know, a big thing in such a small amount of time. But I guess, you know, I guess I felt like I could, and I felt like I had enough contacts given to me where I thought, well, maybe I can do this. And it was looking rough. Even in November, 2 months out, I was like, I didn't even have half of it booked. And I considered just canceling the whole thing. But it was one of those things where, thankfully, since I did start booking it when I did, or at least sending emails and stuff, it was a situation where a lot of people just got back to me really late. And as not ideal as that is, it did kind of work out. It did work out in my favor where a lot of the dates did end up filling up, but like kind of last minute. Mm-hmm. Like by December, everything was booked. But when I wanted everything booked was like maybe September, yeah. You know, but September or October, but like November, it was looking grim. And I was just thinking, this isn't going to work. But it was a situation where I had to find myself in being a person you don't want to be, you know. I don't want to be an asshole. I don't want to be annoying, but you kind of have to be annoying. Yeah. Where it's like, well, you're not really, you haven't responded to my email. You haven't responded to my like Instagram DM. Now I got to be really annoying and I got to find ways to get you to read. Because you know how sometimes if like someone's not following you back, they won't initially get your message?
Yes.
It'll get sent to like the other folder, you know, that you don't request see folder. For like forever. Yeah, the request folder. So I think it was a lot of, because I mean, these were people who, like I'd email, and if they don't email me back, it's like, well, I gotta maybe message them on Instagram or something.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of times where it's like, yeah, obviously they don't know who I am, so they're not gonna follow me back initially. So it was a lot of times where I'd have to message people and be like, or I'd have to respond. You know how if someone responds to your story, like I had to get creative with this. I had to really think like, well, how are they gonna get my messages? So if like someone responds to your story, you'll like immediately get that message, I think. So I had to be like responding to people's stories and say, hey, you know, I messaged you a few months ago or whatever, and now it's like I have to be annoying about this.
Yeah.
But then in doing that, people were like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't get your message. You know, so as annoying as stuff like that is, you kind of have to do that if you want to get your show booked and they're not, you know, responsive, you kind of have to be annoying. And of course no one wants to be annoying, but a lot of times, and really no one was ever like oh wow, you're a big weirdo, you know, responding to my story or something. No, all for like probably 10 times out of 10, they were just, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't get your message. You're right. Oh, thanks for hitting me up this way. And for the most part, people were pretty responsive and pretty open to helping out. It was those situations where even if they couldn't do it, they knew someone who could. So I was very fortunate for that first tour going as well as it did. So it's put me in a position now, you know, where next year it's like, this is what I want to do. And it's what I do feel I'm at a point where I'm confident in doing this. Yeah, I just want to keep on recording this type of music and keep on just taking it out on the road, and whoever wants to have me play wherever, I'm at a place now where it's fun, you know, it's fun. And that's all you want to do, really.
You're kind of working towards going on tour. Going on tour is the goal, but obviously you don't want to be in the red for that sort of thing. Or at least not in the red too bad. You know, sometimes you want to do stuff and it's just, you're going to make it happen regardless. But have you learned over time when you feel like you have the kind of, whatever you want to call it, the financial green light or whatever, to be like, okay, I can go have fun, I can go book a tour or go on tour before you were booking your tours. Is that something that you had to learn over time? Like the idea of like, okay, driving adds up, like food adds up, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. When it comes to like work, I guess in that sense, it's kind of just as easy as, well, I have enough PTO, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like that, of course, it takes time to build that up. So I kind of just try to do the math in my head. Well, if I book a tour for this time, I should have the amount of PTO to be able to cover that whole run. So there's that. That's kind of like, I guess my fall, in a sense, a fallback. If like, say the tour doesn't go well, you know, say a tour doesn't go well, well, at least I got my paycheck from my day job, you know, and I'm able to be okay, you know, when I come home. Now I, obviously you want the shows to pay for the gas and to pay for food and gas. But yeah, for me, like that's just kind of like it all has to work out, you know, the time off from work, the PTO has to work out. And then, yeah, making money from the shows has to work out. Obviously, you know, independent musicians, I guess, musicians in general, any artists in general, you want your work to pay for you to get to the next town. You don't want to dip into your own money, you know, by any means. And thankfully, one thing I will say, when I rented the van, I didn't know that this is probably just me not reading everything whenever I rented it online. But when I got there to pick it up, first day of tour that morning, when I went to go get it, they're like, oh yeah, you know, there's a, no. They gave me the actual price, the price I thought that it was. And then they go, okay. And yeah, the additional $300 deposit on top of that. And I go, oh, I actually didn't say anything. You know, what am I going to say? I need the van. So there's also that. And that was the other reason why I was freaked out about, you know, everything being in 100%, you know. I was like, I don't want to lose the deposit. So luckily we came back and I ended up getting my deposit back. So there's also, you know, there's just all kinds of things that go into it financially. Luckily, the tour I did earlier this year was fine. And like I had, it wasn't a long tour by any means. It was like a week and a half. So luckily, yeah, I was able to take the time off and that was fine. You know, there was nothing really bad in that aspect. And luckily the shows were really, really, really good. You know, I was able to there wasn't really any stinkers, you know, aside from just coming back down and having, I mean, you don't want any days off really, but having the 2 days off, having to cancel the Reno show. Really, I was supposed to have 1 day off. I was supposed to have Reno day off and then Denton. But Reno, you know, show had to be over by 5.
Yeah.
And then Denton got snowed out. Had it not been for that, it would have been amazing. And I mean, even with all of that happening, it still was great. It still was a really good time.
Now, are you selling merch at the shows? Or like, I guess, what's your barometer for good in terms of like success and getting you to the next show? Is that like bodies in the room that are paying to get in?
Yeah, luckily it was. I was just in a situation where, for the most part, yeah, there was good attendance for the most part. For the most part, people buying merch. And all I brought with me was... I just luckily had a bunch of, I think I only had two tapes I was selling. So really I didn't have a lot to sell, but I had a lot of tapes. I guess I just had a lot of each. It was just my first two. I mean, really I only had two solo releases. And then me and Jacob, I brought our other tape from our band that we're in. So really, I was just selling three different tapes, but I had a lot of each. So luckily, I was able to sell a decent amount. I think we ended up selling out of one of my tapes. And then the other one, when we played in LA, because that's where Already Dead Tapes is based out of. And we sold out of I have the album Aggressively Unfriendly. We sold out of those, luckily, before we got to LA. And I had him, I had reached out ahead of time, like, hey, I think I might run out of these. You think we could do another pressing? And luckily, we did another pressing and he gave them to me at the show. Successfully, yeah, I see it as people were there. For the most part, people bought merch, and for the most part, the venue paid. I think there was maybe one venue where I had an issue with something, but that, you know, kind of sorted itself out. That was a Roswell, New Mexico story for that. That's just for a whole other time.
Yeah, for sure.
That was a situation where it was getting really close to, I needed a day in between Lubbock and Tucson, Arizona. Literally I needed a second day of tour. I had my first and third, but I couldn't find anywhere in between. Albuquerque was really hard for some reason. Santa Fe was really hard. I just was having trouble finding anywhere. And of all places, Roswell, New Mexico, I found a place over there, but it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And let's just say at least we had a place to stay that night.
I'll
say that
for a future episode or something. But yeah.
I could do a whole episode on just the Roswell experience. But
we'll make that episode 51 if you're down. You can come on and talk about the Roswell one.
Yeah, Roswell was just one of those things. It was definitely just a tour experience, you know, one where it's like, well, that's definitely a city I know not to go back to, for performing wise, at least. But aside from that, the venues paid, people bought merch, and people were there. I mean, it was awesome. It was my first time. I mean, really going to these places in general, like obviously solo. But I'd never played Seattle before. I had never played, I'd never played Los Angeles before. So it was a lot of firsts, in general, and to come back home, even after, you know, all the weather stuff and having to have some days off that I didn't intend on having, I still came home and I was still happy, and I was, you know, able to look back on it and say like, no, it was a great tour. And it was a great tour. You know, I can't say that it was, even the bad things that did happen, like it wasn't really that bad, you know, thinking back on it. It could have been way worse. Because, you know, taking time away from your life, you know, at home, to be able to go and do something like that, you know, because there were so many times during it where I was just like, oh my God, I'm in San Francisco right now. And then I look at the map and how far away I am from home. I'm in Seattle. Oh, want to guess how far away we are from San Antonio? And it's just like, you know, you're so used to one thing, and then in a blink of an eye, you're like, wow, I'm here. I'm in this place right now. And then you're checking, you know, the finances, you're checking the funds, and you're like, well, hey, we're actually not doing so bad, you know, for experimental music and for never having done this before, you know, because it's not like I had a name, you know, going out on the road that people were like, oh, we're going to go see this person, you know? So I just luckily found myself in situations where thankfully I was booking the shows through people who had somewhat of, you know, followings, or had, you know, people that wanted to come out. And, you know, luckily it was just, for the most part, I was just fortunate enough to have, just a lot of positive experiences to take from it. So, and I just, you know, like everyone, you want to have more of that. So I think that's what I'm going to do for, this first tour. I'm currently booking another tour, kind of similar, a similar route than I did in January for March of next year. I want to do that, but kind of expand a little and maybe play cities I didn't play on this first run. Play some of the same cities, that way I can get hopefully the same people out. Yes. And some, you know, you want to build on what you had from the first time. So I want to do that, and then just, yeah, obviously play some places I didn't play before.
You can follow Ethan and his music through the links in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to the Schnoodlebug Show. Spread the word, tell your friends, and go make stuff.